Good afternoon, everybody. I'm going to call this joint House and Senate Judiciary Committee meeting to order. Let the record reflect that it is 1:07 p.m. on Wednesday, January 28th. I'm Representative Gabrielle Ledoux, and I'm the Chair of House Judiciary. And next to me is Senator Lisa McGuire, Chair of Senate Judiciary. And first of all, I'd like to begin by announcing the names for the record of my fellow members of the House Judiciary Committee. And then my co-chair, Senator McGuire, will introduce her colleagues from the Senate. So to begin with, there is Representative Bob Lynn. And then there is Representative Neil Foster. And there is Representative Matt Klayman. And there is Representative Max Grunberg.
Thank you. Good morning. On behalf of my body, I'd like to introduce our members. We have Senator Peter Michicki, Senator Mia Costello, and my vice chairman, Senator John Coghill. Oh, and my apologies, and Senator Bill Wilikowski.
And let the record reflect that that Representative Charisse Millett has just joined us. So, the purpose of today's meeting is to continue hearings on Senate Bill 30, the Senate Judiciary Committee bill aimed at revising Alaska's criminal statutes relating to marijuana. And also, we have before us House Bill 79, a companion bill to the Senate bill. And before we go any further today, I want to announce that it is not this committee's intention to move either of these bills. And in fact, the House Judiciary Committee meeting, which is scheduled for Friday, is no longer going to be held. We're not going to do anything more with these bills other than hear the testimony from people today until these bills come back from legislative drafting in a will, in a form that we feel reflects the will of the people. So the concerns with respect to affirmative defenses, we're hoping that the next draft will incorporate those concerns and that they will no longer be. Did you want to say anything here, Senator McGuire?
Just to echo the concerns that Madam Chairwoman just spoke of, and our meeting in the Senate body will be postponed on Friday as well until we get a draft back that people can begin testifying from that that's more representative of what this body and our body would like to see.
Thank you. So I know we have in the audience today, I think we have Rick Sabodny. No, I'm not sure that I see. We have Casey Schroeder, and I know from the AG's office, and I know we have Quentin Steiner from the Public Defender's Office, and we have, of course, Hillary Martin from the Legislative Legal with us today, and we have Cynthia Franklin from the Alcohol, Beverage, and Control Board. So I know that it looks like Cynthia Franklin is here to testify, and I'm not sure. We'll call her to begin with, and then when I get to the others, I'll ask whether it's their intention to testify or just to answer questions. So, Cynthia, would you like to join us? Or no, excuse me. She is off net. So, Casey or Quinlan, will you either
of you? I'm on the phone, but I don't know if they unmuted me.
We will in just a moment, Cynthia. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Casey or Quinlan, are you here to answer questions or to testify?
Just to answer questions.
Thank you. Thank you, Casey. Okay, so we have a number of people then off net, and we will begin with Cynthia Franklin. And Cynthia, do you want to begin by identifying yourself for the record and tell us with whom you're affiliated?
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Cynthia Franklin. I'm the director of the Alcoholic Beverage Control Board. I'm testifying by phone from Anchorage today.
Thank you. You can proceed.
thank you, and thank you to the committee for having me. I testified yesterday at State Senate Affairs and just wanted to continue with a couple of comments that we talked about in Colorado concerning the overlay of the criminal statutes with regulating marijuana as a legal substance. So the both the states of Colorado and Washington, which have legalized the substance recreationally, similar to Alaska, began as you have in this committee with the interaction between marijuana as a controlled substance in their state controlled substances acts and marijuana as a regulated substance. I wanted to make the committee aware that in regards to alcohol regulation, we have an entire title, Title IV, which spells out all of the rules around alcohol, not just those rules applying to individuals who hold liquor licenses, but rules applying to members of the general public who could engage in conduct that is criminal in nature around alcohol, which has been deemed to be a dangerous and therefore regulated substance. So if you look through Title IV, you find many crimes, both felonies and misdemeanors, in that title relating to alcohol, where the individuals who are charged with and subsequently prosecuted for those crimes are not license holders. They are individuals who sell or furnish or serve alcohol to minors, who rent rooms for minors to indulge in alcohol in hotel rooms. There's a statute about that, statutes about what happens when you sell alcohol in the state of Alaska without a license, and the accompanying criminal penalties to that conduct. And I simply wanted to point that out to the committee so that you could engage in that philosophical discussion about, is marijuana going to be a regulated substance in Alaska, a controlled substance, or are we going to have a scheme where it's both? And the feedback that I've gotten from officers, both Major Casanovas, who testified yesterday, and other troopers, APD officers in Alaska, and the officers that we met in Colorado, both from that state and other states, is that the danger of creating a set of rules that's in many different places is we are really then subjecting the officers in the field to making some determinations that are not bright line determinations of whether they're dealing with the substance in a legal context or in an illegal context that violates the Controlled Substance Act. And we heard some of those scenarios yesterday from Major Casanovas. That's the exact type of feedback that we have gotten from police departments who have contacted the ABC subsequent to legalization of marijuana on November 4th. And I have spoken with many of you individually. I just want to reiterate that when you're talking about the carve-out procedure that you're looking at in Title 11, so in other words, saying marijuana is a controlled substance, it's an illegal substance, except in these certain instances where we are declaring it to be legal, that you have to make those lines very, very clear, because otherwise we get those scenarios, as Major Casanovas testified, where the officer is left in the field wondering which, whether he's in Title 11 or whether he's in Title, in this case, 1738, in the world of legalized marijuana. The other question that it arises in the interplay between those two titles is the question of the authority of the regulatory board. So Title IV grants us authority over all alcohol-related crimes, and our enforcement officers, we have five of them statewide, are authorized to investigate and charge people with crimes relating to alcohol, whether or not they are our licensees. And the Title 1738 did not address enforcement under either the Alcoholic Beverage Control Board or a Marijuana Control Board, and did not address the scope of any enforcement powers, because it doesn't even talk about enforcement. And so if you are talking about, for instance, I think the easiest example is selling marijuana without a license. If we're going to capture this black market and regulate it, then everyone has to know what happens if you sell marijuana without a license. And whether or not the board charged with regulating and licensing marijuana establishments has any power or authority to enforce on someone who's selling marijuana without a license, or whether that's generally going to fall to more general law enforcement authorities such as the troopers or the local law enforcement. So that is all that I have in terms of testimony today, and of course I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Do we have any questions for Ms. Franklin? Well, then I've got a question for you. Under our current alcohol laws, the Alcohol Beverage and Control Board, are they responsible with respect to people who are selling liquor without a license?
Yes. Yes. That statute is contained in Title IV, and if someone opened a bar down the street without getting a license, we would get that call. We would investigate that offense. Now, obviously, since we only have 5 officers statewide, 1 in Juneau, 1 in Fairbanks, and 3 in Anchorage, we're not capable of enforcing on every alcohol-related crime in the state. But the idea is that there's this centralized agency that has enforcement authority over this substance, and there is someone to assist local law enforcement and troopers when if they go up to an establishment and they claim they have a license. There's some way to check that and some way to determine if that conduct around alcohol is in fact legal and authorized. And so that is where this overlay of marijuana under Title 11 becomes blurry, right?
So under current alcohol law, it's not just the ABC board that has the authority. The troopers and the local police also have authority. Is that correct?
Yes. That is correct. But the enforcement officers authorized in Title IV have specific statutory authority. And an example in the marijuana world is, of course, right now, before February 24th, before this is enacted, the ABC board itself doesn't have any legal authority over marijuana. But even when that date comes, this delivery service that's now currently delivering marijuana, nothing in AS 1738 gives enforcement authority to the board that is set forth as the regulatory agency, whether that be the ABC board, whether the legislature creates a separate marijuana control board. There is no authority for enforcement by employees of that board. So when people are calling us like crazy and saying, why don't you stop these people who are already delivering marijuana without a license, it's frustrating for people to hear, well, you know, our officers, even though we have commissioned officers here at the agency, are not authorized to enforce on that substance. So it's a question of whether there's going to be authority with the board to enforce rules around marijuana, and then to what extent, how far does that authority extend? Does it only extend to the licensees and the people who have been issued licenses, or is there the broader authority that we have over alcohol to try to capture people who are violating those rules who are not licensed by us?
Thank you. Senator McGuire.
Thank you, and thank you, Ms. Franklin, for your testimony yesterday in Senate State Affairs, and then for all the work that you've done to insert yourself into this arena and become an expert. I just wanted to ask you a series of questions for the members that are here in this joint hearing. There's been considerable debate in both bodies about whether or not this bill that we have in front of us, which is on a quicker time table, trying to meet the 24th of February deadline so that Alaskans are clear about what the law is in Alaska with respect to the criminalization of marijuana, should contain a provision that gives distinct authority either to the ABC board or to the hybrid approach of the Marijuana Control Board. And I'd like to hear you state your opinion on the record about whether that provision would come inside this bill that's moving quicker or whether it would be relegated to a second or third piece of legislation. I think you've made some very important points today, ones I thought of and ones I hadn't thought about. In light of some of the articles coming out, at least from my community in Anchorage over the last few days, with people beginning to distribute marijuana without a license. So I'd just like to hear your thoughts on that, because I'd like to commend those thoughts then to the lawmakers sitting around here today.
Thank you, Senator McGuire. We understand the urgency in getting a bill out, and we know that early drafts did have the board issue addressed in what we're referring here to as the criminal bills. The answer sort of depends on what authority is going to be given to the board in terms of criminal enforcement. So if that board was going to be given the broader criminal enforcement, such as the ABC board has over alcohol, I think it might make sense to have it in the criminal bill. I will say that we as the agency have had and continue to pursue a plan of at least putting in place one emergency regulation on February 24th to define public for the officers in terms of citing individuals on that date for consuming marijuana in public. Anchorage passed their ordinance last night, and that is a mirror image of 1738040, which is in the ballot measure 2 initiative that outlaws consuming marijuana in public. And we had worked with the court system to make sure that everything was going to be in place and ready for February 24th, and then a definition of the term public would be forthcoming from the board, so that at least that ticket would be ready to go if law enforcement encountered that problem on the 24th or the 25th. You know, the timing of it and which bill it's in is something that I would have to defer to legislators, as knowing more about that process than I do. However, I think that there is an urgency, and it's going to become more urgent as more people step forward and say, well, you haven't told me I couldn't, so therefore I'm going to start my business now. And we, as the potential licensing authority, can look at the way our licensing and selection process is set up, and we can send the message to people who step out in front, you may be endangering your chances of getting a license later. But the public really expects a more enforcement and something more of a response from us generally as a state to say, if we are waiting for rules, then you should have to wait for the rules. And so that's a long way of saying it would make sense to me, if the board is going to have broad enforcement authority, to have it in early if you're going to get a bill through early. But if it's not going to, then it's not going to make much of a difference.
Excellent. Thank you very much.
Representative Mellett.
Thank you. So my question is just a little deeper, so whether we decide to go with a board or not. My question is, recently, as of 2 years ago, we moved your board from public safety to commerce. So now we have another board that we're going to be doing, and we've talked about it from only a law enforcement perspective and not from a commerce perspective. So where would you put this board? Would you put it under commerce, or would you put it under public safety? Since we're talking about enforcement, and for the ABC board, it was put under commerce. So what's your opinion on that?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The ballot measure says it's in commerce. I mean, so I think that a question for you is whether or not, you know, that's a serious enough issue to go against what the voters voted for in terms of where it's going to be. I think both boards need to be in the same department, because to take one substance and put it in public safety and leave one substance in commerce could potentially lead to a different way that the substances are approached, fundamentally different way. The debate over whether or not the ABC belongs in public safety or commerce has been concluded. I think that there are a lot of aspects of the Alcoholic Beverage Control Board that benefit from commerce's work, although I am aware that there are individuals who think that, who still continue to think that it more squarely fits in public safety. I think that the debate over what type of department the regulating a dangerous substance belongs in really puts a light on how, what a difficult balancing act we're doing with both of these substances, because they both have commercial aspects, and there are many individuals in our community that are frankly looking forward to exploring whether or not there are some commercial interests for them in the marijuana market, and at the same time they both have serious public safety and public health concerns. And what we did learn in Colorado is, we know this about alcohol, but we are learning it about marijuana. There's a societal cost to this substance, and those costs have to be covered in some way. And so, they don't come free, right? And so I think that if the ABC is in commerce and there's a separate marijuana control board created, that it would not make sense to me for the two substances to be regulated in two different departments, because it could lead to some fundamental differences in the way that they're regulated and handled. And I think there are similarities, and certainly that was the intent of the initiative, to leave them together. And it's, of course, always up to the legislature, or even, it's my understanding, even the governor could move these agencies by executive order. So I'll leave it at that.
Thank you. Representative Clayman.
Thank you. I want to just make sure I'm tracking what you're saying, that the voters did many things in passing the initiative, but what they didn't do was provide specific statutory authority for the Alcohol Beverage Control Board to exert regulatory and other enforcement authority over marijuana. And what you're saying is, whatever we do as a legislature, we need, if we want either the Marijuana Control Board or the ABC Board to exercise its regulatory authority, we need to take statutory steps to make that happen, because it wasn't done in the initiative.
Thank you, Representative Clayman, through the chair. Yes, the initiative did create the Alcoholic Beverage Control Board as the regulatory authority. It outlined 9 areas of rulemaking for the board to do. It did not address enforcement. It spoke about civil penalties for violating the rules around licensing. It spoke about some small penalties for consuming in public. It did not speak to, for instance, what the penalty is for selling marijuana without a license once those licenses are issued. And it did not speak to enforcement authority in terms of who, what agency, whether it's a general law enforcement authority or whether there is specific authority with the regulatory agency to enforce around the substance against non-licensees. Certainly it talks about creating penalties for licensees who violate the rules, but not for people who are operating completely outside the licensing authority, but within the realm of dealing in the substance in, I guess, what I would call a semi-commercial manner. I mean, when you look at these businesses that have cropped up, they appear on the surface to be legitimate businesses, and yet they're not waiting to get licenses or to follow the rules. So they're holding themselves out as authorized to sell and deal in the substance, and challenging you as lawmakers and challenging us as regulators and challenging the troopers and the police and prosecutors and judicial system in their roles and saying, what are you going to do about it? And so those are the rules, yes, that we need the legislature to write in clear, nice, clear, bright lines, please.
Senator Welikowski.
Thank you. The initiative says that marijuana cannot be used in a public place. And can you give us some guidance, maybe some thoughts on how public place is defined in Colorado? And there's a resolution from the Matsu Borough which asks some interesting questions, such as is a passenger vehicle considered a public place? Is a private baseball field a public place? A smoking club standing on the edge of your private property? Can you give us a little, some of your thoughts on that?
Thank you, Senator Welikowski, through the chair. Yes, I think that we need a definition for public, as in 040, and the definition that we had determined we wanted to point to was the definition in 1181-953. I think that definition has been discussed. That's the definition of public place used in for purposes of criminal statutes, for purposes of drinking in public. It does include some parks. It might include the baseball field that you have discussed. It might not. But if there's a definition in place, then that's something for an officer to refer to. It specifically does include the public areas of apartment buildings and things like that. It does not include vehicles. So I believe that definition is, if it's not in your materials, it's floating around somewhere because I heard it mentioned at the hearing, I believe, on Monday. And that is a very similar definition to the one that was used by the City of Anchorage in their ordinance. It is very similar to the definition that we saw in Colorado for public place. It's a fairly standard definition in terms of trying to define those spaces where your activities affect others. And I think that is the best definition moving forward for the term public as in 1738-040.
Senator.
If I could, one more follow-up. Thank you, Madam Chair. How about publicly owned facilities, AHFC housing, for instance, that's rented out or leased out? Any thoughts on that?
Yes. Thank you, Senator Welikowski, through the chair. There's a section in the initiative that allows private business and property owners to specifically ban marijuana. And I think this issue has come up before in terms of if that is publicly owned, you know, but it's leased out to individuals, such as in an assisted living facility or receive state funding, would that apply? That is, I anticipate when you look at 1738.120, nothing in this chapter shall prohibit a person, employer, school, hospital, recreation, youth center, correction facility, corporation, or any other entity who occupies, owns, or controls private property from prohibiting or otherwise regulating the possession, consumption, use, display, transfer, distribution, sale, transportation, or growing of marijuana on or in that property. Obviously, a correction facility isn't going to be owned, generally speaking, by a private entity, although some are. It would seem that this is going to be tested by those facilities banning the substance, and then we're going to see years of testing some of these rules in court, I'm afraid.
Senator Costello.
Thank you, through the chair. Cynthia, you've obviously spoken with counterparts or folks in Colorado and Washington because we're following in their steps now and can actually learn from some of the mistakes that they've made. So I'm curious to know from you if you could share with the committee who you spoke with or met with in Colorado specifically and how they addressed edibles, and also if you think that the non-chemical solvent language in this bill bans all edibles.
Thank you, through the chair. Could I just ask for a clarification? If I think what in the bill bans all edibles?
It's the section that talks about, I think it's, let's see, if I look at my sectional, it's the portion of the bill that, I think section 2 of the bill, pages 3 and 4, lines 21 to 26. And actually, that's sort of a secondary question that I have. I'm more interested in knowing from you, when you talk to Colorado, what lessons do you think we can learn from how they approach this issue? And actually, I am interested in knowing what they have done with edibles, if you happen to know that.
Thank you, through the chair. I do. The main individuals that we met with in Colorado that were really boots on the ground regulators were Andrew Friedman, who is the state director of marijuana in Colorado. We met with Ron Camerzal and the Marijuana Enforcement Division employees who are their enforcement of the marijuana rules in Colorado. And we met with several members of the Attorney General's office who are working on marijuana in Colorado. We learned a lot about issues that they've had. Many of their edible issues came about because they had already had licenses issued for medical marijuana dispensaries. And so the medical marijuana dispensaries in Colorado were selling very potent edibles that were high THC content for medical marijuana patients who had high tolerance levels for marijuana. So when the recreational market began in January of 2014, what they found, the problems with edibles, were that those were very strong products that were out now among consumers who did not know as much about potencies as we're having an uncomfortable days experimenting with those edible substances. So what Colorado did is they went back about mid-year last year and they put together a stakeholders group and they changed the rules. They created serving sizes. They created child-proof packaging rules. They created a new set of rules around edibles that was designed to address a recreational edible market, a group of consumers who did not have as much experience with high THC content products with the delayed effect of edibles. So what was happening was people were buying it, they were eating the square of chocolate or whatever they thought, whatever they had bought, and then they weren't feeling anything, so they ate some more. And that was what led to them getting uncomfortable levels of THC in their system, which were causing them to go to the hospital and really really have a lot of discomfort with that experience. So the new rules went into effect, I believe, in October or maybe in November. The new limits on there is now a total limit on the number of servings that can be in any given package. If a package has more than one serving, it has to be resealable to childproof, and we saw some of that technology when we were there. And they have created a new set of rules, and then they created a public education campaign around starting with 5 milligrams of THC per serving of edible and waiting. And it was really the emergency room visits and the things that had sent the ripples through the Colorado enforcement system slowed down immediately after the public education campaign. So even though we were there before the new serving size rules took effect on February 1st, they had already seen a dramatic decrease in problems with those edibles from that educating the public and from then forcing the licensees to begin designating, this is what we're selling, identifying how many servings are in that, making them special rules around demarcation for multiple serving packages. So some of the stories that you hear about, well, you're only supposed to take one bite of this cookie, Colorado has solved through a set of rules that are that we can easily take. We can not only take those rules and incorporate them, but I believe that we can even scale back a bit more on those. There was a big fight at that stakeholders group between 5 milligrams versus 10 and 10.1, simply because these people already had, these licensees already had products on the shelf, and they were moving from a position of already having that established. We don't have any of that yet. So I think we're at a tremendous advantage over Colorado in being able to set our rules before we start, in being able to set serving sizes on the lower end of acceptable range, and of being able to cap out the total THC content of an individual edible product such that even if you ate the whole thing, you are not going to have that overdosing experience that some of the recreational users in Colorado had at the beginning.
Senator McGuire.
Thank you, and thank you again, Ms. Franklin. I'm going to ask you a series of requests, if I could, from the legislature. You, to me, in all the folks that have testified, I mean, you have the broadest base of expertise, and so again, I thank you for taking the issue on, as was asked by Representative Klayman. To what degree is ABC authorized to regulate in the initiative? And it's pretty broad. It's pretty blanket. As you said, there's no specific criminal action that is noted, but you took it on, and I appreciate that. So to that end, I have a few requests. The first is you provided a packet of recommended changes to the current legislation yesterday in Senate State Affairs. And I thought it was really good, including some of the details you just gave Senator Costello on the definition of edibles, what needs to be in there to protect the public, dividing, you know, the pieces of food into certain amounts, the fact that you have unadulterated products that you have not spoken about that here today, but the idea that you would take something like a packet of gummy bears or a Hostess Twinkie out of a packet, spray marijuana or inject marijuana THC into it, and then resell that would be something that would be excluded from the definition of edibles in Alaska, and then also the notion of 5 milligrams. If you could please provide a packet of information to the members of the House and the Senate Judiciary Committee that contains those recommendations, along with, I'm going to ask you a little bit broader of a question, and my staff would be happy to help you do it, is sort of a binder of the things that you have collected in your journeys. If there are meeting notes you think that are relevant, if there are handouts that you were given from the Attorney General's offices in Colorado and Washington State, if there was expert testimony in your conferences and things like that that you picked up while traveling for the public that you could share with us. I think it'd be helpful for us to add to our marijuana notebooks this information to learn from it, and also so we're all kind of operating from the same base. So that's request number one. Request number two is draft improvements. And I put you on the spot for a reason, because there's been a healthy debate in this building about whether or not the issue of a licensing board needs to be acted on by the legislature. Some people in this building feel that it was addressed in the initiative and therefore by default doesn't need to be discussed. Some people would like to see a hybrid marijuana control board. Some people would like to give you more authority. In any case, my views have been very public. I believe that it's the legislature's responsibility to act and to give very clear direction about what board will have it and what the authority of that board would be. So I'd like to hear from you in a letter A series of recommendations of improvements to the bill that you have in front of you, including what you would like to see by virtue of a board. The authorities you think you need when you look at Title IV with respect to criminal powers, investigatory powers, resources, et cetera. And please don't leave a stone unturned. And then the last question I have for you, those were statements, is a question for you, which is, could you tell me a little bit about, you and I have had these conversations, you've had them with my office, about the workload that ABC has right now. I don't really have a particular concern, I guess, about whether it's called the Marijuana Control Board or the ABC Board, but what I have a concern about is this is a brand new area of commercialization. You don't want to see people criminalized when they shouldn't be. You also don't want to see the public harmed by a commercialization of a substance that isn't managed the right way. So I'd like to hear a little bit of testimony from you about whether you think the ABC board is up, running, ready to take this on, given all that you have right now with your Title IV licenses, and if not, what you envision the board to look like. And then I'd like all that in writing, if you could, and all your backup documents, please.
Thank you, Senator McGuire. Yes, I do. I can provide all of that, first. And second, regarding the board situation, the ABC board is a 5-member volunteer board. It has currently has 2 liquor industry representatives and 3 public representatives, one of whom must be from a rural community. And it has been functioning that way and set up that way since 1980, when the bulk of Title IV was written. Many of the members of this committee are aware that the ABC board and together with the Alaska Mental Health Trust and the Rasmussen Foundation has been working for 2.5 years on updates to Title IV. And so we have a situation here in this legislative session where you sort of have the way we've been regulating alcohol and then the way that this broad stakeholders group, which included CHAR and many members of the all levels and aspects of the liquor industry, the way that we really think that liquor ought to be regulated. And it's a few tweaks and a few cleanups, but there are some major changes in there, one of which is a change to the makeup of the board. So the board, as envisioned by the Title IV revisions and by the Stakeholders Committee, includes a couple of designations. It's still a 5-member board, but it includes a public health and public safety designation, that rural public member. And then it takes into account the background of the director, even though the director is not a voting member of the board. My background in criminal prosecution would count as a public safety background. So under the way that the board is composed today, nothing would change about the board if those revisions are passed. However, if at some point an industry representative became the director of the agency, then there would be one less industry representative on the board itself. And that is the way those changes are designed. I think that the ideal setup for a marijuana board would be to have a mirrored board, that it has the same makeup but with 2 marijuana industry representatives. And the reason I say that is because if you kept it with the ABC board and you tried to get some marijuana representation on that board, you would have to also increase a public health and public safety designations on the board. In other words, if you had 2 alcohol industry representatives on a 5-member board and you simply added 2 marijuana industry representatives, then suddenly you would have 4 industry representatives on a 7-member board. And almost all of our liquor licensees are fine, upstanding members of our business community. I'm not saying anything against them, but I do think that there would be a public safety concern if the industries had a majority vote on the board. So in order to make the ABC board represent the marijuana industry and move forward functioning as a board, you would have to make it a 9-member board, you know. And once you've made it a 9-member board, in my opinion, you might as well have 2 5-member boards, because as you know from the large group of you trying to all get together at one time in one place, the larger you make that group, the harder it is to get the substantive work done. We're very busy at the agency. We have over 1,800 liquor licenses. I have 10 employees statewide. Half of them are licensing and administrative employees. Half of them are enforcement officers, commissioned police officers. And we are very busy with alcohol. We could stay very busy with alcohol. We operate on a shoestring budget, $1.75 million a year for the entire agency. We do bring in some licensing receipts. Most of those go back to the cities with the idea that the cities will get the licensing money back from the ABC board to help in enforcement of the local law enforcement alcohol issues. So that is written into the marijuana initiative that half of the licensing fees would go back to a municipality if the business is located in a municipality. And there are some similarities, many similarities in the way that 1738 is written to the way that Title IV works. But certainly, if the board and the agency, because it's a volunteer board, the bulk of the alcohol work is done by the employees of the agency. If it's left with this agency, we have to expand. We believe that we can expand in a fiscally responsible manner that is less than creating an entire new 10-member agency. And one of the issues that you referred to, Senator McGuire, that we have with that is, you know, we really don't have marijuana regulators standing in a closet somewhere waiting to be just brought out and placed on this board. This is a new industry. It is a new substance to regulate in a regulatory manner versus a criminal enforcement manner. And I believe that the individuals who have the most experience in the kinds of problems that can come up with licensing individuals in a business setting to deal with a dangerous substance are the very people that we have on our staff here who have seen the issues that come up with issuing licenses, who have seen the issues that come up with enforcement, and we see every day licensees who are having issues who do not have criminal intent, who need the special kind of enforcement and licensing experience that our people have in trying to get everyone on track. Obviously, what we want most from our liquor licensees is for them to understand the rules and play by the rules. And if they do that and they stay on the right side of it, we want to help them as much as possible in that. And I think that those were some of the points when Senator Costello was talking about the, you know, where this agency belongs. These are some of the points that it's not a purely enforcement issue, and it's not a purely business issue. It is a hybrid issue, and the closest that we have to experts are sitting right here in my agency. I'm not talking about myself. I've only been here a short time, but I'm talking about the individuals who have a lot of longevity here and who know how to deal with licensees in this kind of a balancing manner. So I think that the ideal setup is to have two volunteer boards, both served by this agency. We have had our Attorney General check out Representative Gruenstein's concern about conflict and determined that there is not a legal conflict in an agency serving both boards. And we certainly, in the Department of Commerce, have some agencies that serve and help as many as 38 separate boards. So there's legal precedent for that. And if that is the way that it turns out, then I think we will have the most experienced people around trying to help set this thing up and get it going on the right track.
Thank you. Did you have a follow-up?
I think so. thank you, Ms. Franklin. It's Matt Kleinman. The two questions. One is, it sounds like your recommendation is that we have the staffing done within your agency, even though that's going to result in needing to hire additional people to serve two different regulation of two different substances, but that within that agency, your recommendation is that we should create a board for marijuana and maintain the existing board structure and population on that board for alcohol. But my second question, and I just want to make sure I'm following, because we've had some other things come up in the news about other agencies and we've got a new governor, have you consulted with the administration? Is this actually the official position of the Walker administration that they do want, they're urging the legislature to do exactly as you have described?
Thank you, Representative Clayman, through the chair. Yes, we met with Governor Walker in December, and we outlined all three options. We had sort of an option A, option B, option C. Option A, it all stays with the ABC. Option C, it all goes to a marijuana control board and a separate agency. Option B is the hybrid version that I just described to you, and Governor Walker did endorse the hybrid plan.
Thank you. Representative Grunberg.
Thank you. Through the chair, Ms. Franklin, this is Max Grunberg. I am concerned because we're not just adopting a new law in this state, but the few states that are going in this direction are really pointing the way for what could be a very large, very lucrative industry in the whole country. And there could be large interests, both legal and illegal, that would like to get involved, everybody from the pharmaceuticals to the mob, and I'll be very frank here. And I don't know what they're doing outside in other countries, but I know in some countries this type of activity runs the show, Thailand and places like that, as in the past. And we've got lawyers who could potentially be involved advising both boards, conflicts of interest, and board members and staff with many, many ethical questions, not limited to conflicts of interest. We have a series of rules for the executive branch and for the legislative branch that are not totally the same in this area. And I'm not sure that will really fit the bill here. But what efforts are you making, or do you suggest that we make, to carefully obtain expertise in the area of ethics? And what are you doing?
Thank you, Representative Grunberg, through the chair. The question of a conflict is a good one. We brought that up with our Assistant Attorney General, who referred me to the Executive Branch Ethics Act, and she cited me to AS 3952010B, which holds that holding incompatible offices is forbidden, but establishing that kind of conflict is highly fact-sensitive. And the inquiry in that would be a conflict of interest between an individual board member, not the entire board. I will say it is not a given that the alcohol and marijuana industries are competing industries. That has been suggested by some people. That is not clear yet. We do know that in Washington, the Washington Liquor Control Board regulates both industries. I am not aware of a challenge to that as being a conflict of interest, but when Washington State passed its initiative, as in Alaska, they put control with the Washington Liquor Control Board and did not create the possibility of a separate board. Now, the Washington Liquor Control Board, it consists of three members who are state employees. That board holds three board meetings a week. These boards, this ABC board that we serve, holds five board meetings a year. And as you can imagine, they have a substantial individual business decisions to make at those meetings. So I am not aware that there is, first of all, that it's an accepted fact that the industries are competing or conflicting. And second of all, that I see two separate boards as a way to minimize the possibility of a conflict of interest, and the service of the agency work in serving both boards. I know you and I discussed a Chinese wall, but according to the research that our attorney did, she did not believe that anything in Alaska state law would suggest that there is a conflict of interest in an individual agency licensing two types of industries.
If I may. Yeah, and I appreciate that research, and I'd like to explore that further at some point. But about 7 or 8 years ago, the question came up whether we should have a gaming commission. And some members who are here today remember with a smile that we created a special house committee to investigate that issue. And that committee, and I was on it, met numerous times. And ultimately, some people in the hospitality industry did not like the results that we came out with in our report, and there was an attempt to do a local initiative in Anchorage on the subject. It's not just a question of conflicts of interest. I'm just raising the issue of, quote, ethics generally, because such things as the necessity for background checks, the necessity for full disclosure of the people who are involved in this, the questions of training and liability, all of these are not just legal issues, but to some extent ethical issues. And I just want to lay that one word in front of these joint committees, that there are and will be significant ethical issues. I am not an expert. I'd like to find out if there are experts nationally on these subjects. We certainly have had the benefit of ethical expertise in the drafting and amending the Legislative and Executive Ethics Act. And I think that we need to be carefully looking at this in this area as well.
Thank you. Senator Michiki?
Yeah, I have this might take a moment. I'm not one that likes to frame questions for a long time. But Ms. Franklin, my personal goal, all of our goal is to meet the intent of the voters and implementation of the initiative. I think that's why we're here and putting a lot of time into this. So I have one question. That 1738.110 talks about local control, and I think Ms. Franklin's the appropriate question or person to ask this question because of the other local control options under alcohol. So, I mean, it provides for prohibiting the operation of cultivation and marijuana produce product manufacturing facilities, testing facilities, or retail facilities. Allows a local government to provide regulations that govern the time, place, manner, and number of marijuana establishment operations. It allows them to designate a local regulatory authority. It allows them to establish procedures for the issuance, suspension, and revocation of a registration. And it allows a local government to establish a schedule of annual operating registration application fees. What I wonder is, I don't know if this has been considered, but are we worried about a litigation challenge when it comes to native sovereignty on the local control issue, so there's not the ability for a dry village under the initiative? And I'm just wondering if that could pass muster in the future. So many villages are outside of an organized municipality but still retain the right to be dry, and we know a lot of areas of our state have some pretty significant substance abuse problems. I'm just wondering if we're worried that there could be a challenge in that case, and if it's something we need to consider during implementation.
Thank you, Senator Michiki, through the chair. Yes, I see that, and answering questions daily to local governments who call and say, we definitely want to ban this substance in our local community, and the answer, of course, is that 1738.110 permits you to do that, except that nothing in that act can change Raven versus Alaska. So the way that I compare it for them in terms of alcohol local option law is that the best you can do in a local community given Raven versus Alaska is what we call local option 4 for municipalities, local option 3 for villages, which is banning everything but possession. And we know that that has proven to be a problematic in terms of enforcement in those communities. We have, I believe, something like 38 communities on the books who are under local option 4 at this time. And we have heard over the years and in the stakeholders process that option doesn't work very well for them because it permits this loophole, if you will, for alcohol to be in that community in terms of possession being legal, but everything else being illegal. That pretty much describes the status of marijuana in the state of Alaska since Raven, what some people call magic marijuana, where it's legal to have it, but not legal to sell, transport, manufacture, or purchase it. And so the way that I see a challenge coming up to that would be if there were a village or a municipality who attempted to outlaw it and some sort of a lawsuit to test the Raven decision. I don't know that any municipal attorney would allow the village to try to do that, since the initiative says you can ban it, but then it also says nothing in the act is intended to change anything, any of those privileges granted through the Supreme Court in the Raven and Noy cases. So I do think and believe that there are lawyers in this state chomping at the bit to challenge Raven, and have been waiting for the right case. At least that's the rumor that I've heard. So that potentially, if someone was charged with conduct that they felt was legal under the Raven opinion, and the law enforcement officer and prosecutor and jury did not, and they were found guilty, that might be one way that that issue is tested. Another way, less likely in my opinion, would be that a village or municipality would attempt to outlaw even possession. They probably have to do that through ordinance, and then that ordinance would be challenged. So those are the two ways I see that issue going up. But as I said, I think the most likely scenario is that when the rules around the local options are written, whether it be by the ABC board or a marijuana control board or by the legislature, that understanding would be there that none of the local options would be able to prohibit the possession allowed by the Raven opinion.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
You know, it just dawned on me, and I'm not sure, Ms. Franklin, that you're the correct person to be asking this question, but could you give it a shot? Has anybody ever challenged the village local dry rules kind of on a Raven analysis?
Madam Chair, yes. It's my understanding. I don't know the name of the case, but we did ask that question early on, and there was a case that challenged under the same privacy rights the ability to prohibit a person from possessing alcohol. And at the time that Supreme Court case was decided, the Supreme Court said alcohol is a very dangerous substance. Of course, they can ban it. So it's fascinating, area of the law.
Actually, it is very fascinating.
Mm-hmm. Could we get a copy of the opinion? Can we get a copy of the opinion?
Do you have a copy of that opinion?
I can look it up. I don't have it in my hand, but I certainly can look it up, Madam Chair.
And or if you could at least give us send me the citation, and I can get it around to the other committee members.
You might ask some of those fine lawyers you have in the room with you. It sounds like you have experts there before you.
Thank you. We'll manage.
Okay.
Representative Lind?
No, I was trying to count the lawyers.
There are quite a few of them.
The question is, you're fine.
So I have another question for you. And maybe this has been answered in a careful reading of both the initiative and the various bills floating around. But how does the 1 ounce proviso, how do we get that synthesized with the sale by a licensee of edibles? So if you have people over for dinner and there's a whole bunch around, do you have to throw it away at the end of your dinner party if it hasn't all been eaten in one? I'm actually very serious about the question. And I'm not sure whether that's been covered anyplace.
Well, Madam Chair, it's my understanding, and this is based on my experience asking these questions of the manufacturers and processors in Colorado, but it's my understanding that, you know, the edibles are manufactured through a process using marijuana concentrates. And I think there was an earlier question that I failed to address, but yes, if you remove concentrates from the definition of marijuana, then you are removing edibles, essentially, because the edibles are processed and manufactured using marijuana concentrate. So when we asked retailers in Colorado how many edibles we could buy as tourists in Colorado are under stricter purchase rules in terms of the number of ounces or the amount of marijuana they can purchase than Colorado residents. So if you were from another state, you can purchase up to a quarter ounce of flowers or bud in one of those stores. And if you're a Colorado resident, you can purchase 1 ounce at a time. And they have a slang term called smurfing, where individuals are actually going from store to store and purchasing their limit, and that is so that they can divert the marijuana out of state and take it across the border and sell it for a higher price in neighboring states. I don't expect Alaska to have that problem, but the retailers told us that in order to reach an ounce or an ounce limit for a Colorado resident, that, for instance, a candy bar that had 100 milligram serving of THC in the candy bar, that they could buy 95 candy bars to reach that ounce. So because it's an ounce of concentrate and it really just a small amount per serving, if you will, per package of edibles, it's fairly difficult to get to that limit, that ounce limit, with edibles, without getting eating a lot, I guess would be the way to put it.
Thank you. Does anybody else have any questions for Ms. Franklin?
I'm just sort of raising an issue here, if I may. Another issue that we're going to be dealing with will be potentially tort liability. You could have a party, and somebody takes a couple of brownies or whatever and goes and hits somebody. And the question is liability of the owner and the supplier. And I think we have to be aware of all of these issues.
I understand that. So that would need to be either done through legislation or the common law. Well, seeing no further questions, thank you very much for your testimony. Thank you very much for your time, and appreciate it. And thank you for
thank
what
you
do.
Sure. Thank you for having me.
So we will go to the next person on off-net, and that is Karen O'Keefe. Karen, are you there?
Good afternoon. I am. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you quite well. Do you want to identify yourself for the record?
I would be happy to. I'm Karen Belso-Keith, and I'm the director of the State Policies Department at the Marijuana Policy Project. We're a national nonprofit that works with advocates and legislators to reform marijuana policies. And should I just go on with my comments on the bill now?
Certainly. Did you get our comments? Did you hear our comments, my comments at the beginning of this session, however, that the bill is going through a redraft process?
Yes, that was wonderful to hear, and I've listened to most of the other hearings that have happened as well. We really appreciate the attention of the committee to the issue and its receptiveness to concerns.
Thank you.
Thank you. As you may know, MPP assisted with the Measure 2 campaign, including by providing funding and drafting assistance. Dr. Tim Hinterberger submitted some written comments, which I think you all have, raising concerns to the current draft of SB 30, which would also be the same as the House bill, and asked that I discuss some of the concerns that were raised, some of which have already been discussed, on the issue of the affirmative defense, but also a few other ones.
Excuse me, Ms. O'Keefe. Okay, let's take a brief at ease while I figure this out. Karen, can you hear me?
Hi, it took a second to unmute. I'm here.
Yes, we're going to go off. We're going to recess for just a minute. We're having technical issues, so I just wanted to let you know that's the reason for the delay. We're having some technical issues with our electrical equipment.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
I know she was telling you.
All right, folks, we're calling the committee back to order again. It is 2:30, and we've got Karen O'Keefe on the line. Karen, are you still with us?
I am.
Great. And before you proceed any further, could you tell us what city in California you're testifying from?
West Hollywood.
West Hollywood. Thank you. All right, go ahead.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members of the committee. I'm here from the Marijuana Policy Project at the request of Dr. Hinterberger, who submitted written testimony to the committee raising some concerns about the bill that is going to be revised and that is being considered. The first one I know is the biggest concern, and I know the committee is already looking at revising it, and that is the issue of the defense replacing the comprehensive legal protections that Measure 2 includes. When you consider revisions to it, I would highly recommend keeping the language from Measure 2 of Statute 17.38.20 and 17.38.70. Those are the comprehensive legal protections for adults who are 21 and older and for the stores and their employees who would legally sell marijuana. They include not only defenses from criminal prosecution, but they also explicitly make the conduct lawful, both under state law and under the law of the municipality. In addition to that issue, in the defense itself, there seems to have been some confusion about the scope of what kind of possession is allowed. It said that adults could possess up to an ounce of marijuana, and I just wanted to clarify that the initiative allows an adult to possess 6 plants and all of the marijuana they produce from their plants if it's at the same location. So that's an important distinction I just wanted to make sure the committee was aware of.
Thank you.
The next issue... You're welcome. The next issue that we wanted to raise was the issue of display. The draft of Senate Bill 30 would penalize not only public consumption, but also public display of marijuana. And display is one of the words that's included in Measure 2 for what adults will be allowed to do. It explicitly says that public consumption is prohibited, but display is not. So that word should be stricken from 11.17.065. The next concern was that certain means of producing extracts would be prohibited, which would be fine as long as manufacturers that are licensed and are complying with strict regulations are able to safely manufacture these kind of extracts. For adults, we don't have any objection to banning potentially dangerous methods of home extraction that might cause explosions, But in addition to vegetable glycerin, we urge that water be exempted. Water can be a solvent, and adults can safely extract resins from marijuana using cold water, and there's no chance of explosion. So it's just one word that will prevent an unnecessary ban. And a lot of patients and others consume marijuana in products to avoid smoking and edible products. And until stores are up and running, this allows adults to make these products in a safe manner in their home. The next thing I wanted to raise that was raised in Dr. Hinterberger's letter is the issue of harmonizing hashish and marijuana. We appreciate that the bill, Senate Bill 30, attempted to do so, but I would recommend some revisions to the way it's worded. Right now, 11.71.1901B, I believe it is, says that marijuana, hashish, and hash oil or hashish oil are Schedule 6A controlled substances. That suggests that hashish and hash oil are separate from marijuana. However, Measure 2's definition of marijuana includes concentrates and resins and thus includes hash. So I'd suggest just striking the word hash everywhere since it's included in marijuana, or alternately that could say marijuana including hashish, hash oil, and so forth is a controlled substance. So it's clear that they're not meant to be separate because it's part of the definition of marijuana. And then finally, the other issue in the bill that we wanted to speak about that was mentioned in Dr. Hinterberger's letter was the issue of open containers. The bill would propose penalizing having marijuana that had already in a container that had been opened or paraphernalia from being in a vehicle if it had been appears to have been used in the vehicle. And I wanted to point out that for many people, marijuana is a medicine. And the bill, the law, Measure 2, allows a lot of locations to ban the use of marijuana in them. So, for example, a seriously ill patient may live at a nursing home that does not allow them to use their medicine there. If this provision were to pass, they couldn't go into a parked car and use marijuana even through non-smoked methods when there's no driver present. So I think that's an unnecessary prohibition. It's unnecessarily broad, and that there should be, maybe there should be revised or removed completely. In addition, under the alcohol statute, there are two exceptions that aren't included when this is drafted for marijuana in the bill. And those are if a person is in a vehicle that has a partition between the back and the front, and if they're in a vehicle that has 12 or more seats in it, it's driven by a professional driver, so essentially a bus or something like a limo. And I would urge that that be revised to match the alcohol statute and would just mention that, of course, marijuana doesn't need to be smoked, so all of these broad prohibitions for the open container would apply even to a person carrying a package that had edibles in them. And it applies not only to recreational adult users, but also to patients. And those are the issues that I wanted to raise. I really appreciate the committee's thoughtful consideration of the issues, and I would be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Do we have any questions?
Just one question, Madam Chair.
Senator Katya.
And thank you for your testimony and some of the recommendations I think are going to be good for us to consider. One of the things that we struggle with, and maybe you've already looked at it, is testing for impaired driving. Public safety seems to be one of the harder things that we've been able to get to, and so the open container was at least our attempt at trying to get down that road. What have you seen that is going to help us say, you have an individual right, but public safety has this importance? How do you see that?
Well, I think it's important that it, through the chair, that it remain unlawful for adults to drive while they're under the influence of marijuana or any other substance. And, you know, perhaps it would be appropriate to have more training for law enforcement officers, for drug recognition experts that can recognize signs of being impaired by marijuana and so forth. But I would urge the committee to be careful not to be overly broad and to encompass totally benign activity, especially that might be done by people who are seriously ill.
And I think that one of the questions we came up with as we, Madam Chair, if I might continue, in the open container, and yes, we're sympathetic to the use of medicinal, but we're also sympathetic to the fact that edibles will be coming along with this, And that is going to be something that would be maybe a little harder to detect than, say, if you opened up a door and could smell smoke, for example. So have you looked at edible consumption while driving, and is there any way that that could be detected without, maybe a sobriety walking test or something?
Through the chair, I think that the drug recognition experts, the training that law enforcement has, is the best way of recognizing that. I don't know that, you know, a person who consumes the edible can be under the influence for many hours, so the chances of the law enforcement officer finding an open container that will show that they consumed, you know, edible product in the car isn't the most effective way of doing so. A lot of people, you know, who are highly impaired by marijuana, it's not associated with risk-taking, so hopefully most would not be inclined to drive in the first place. But I think that law enforcement will have to look at the training they have to detect impairment for any number of substances, you know, prescription drugs. There's a widening amount of training that's happening for law enforcement to be able to recognize when a person is under the influence of anything, and they have specific protocols for testing to find that out. And, of course, if the person's driving irresponsibly, too slow, or the law enforcement officer has a reason to pull them over, then that, too, can be one of the things that they can take note of and to take into consideration. I know someone named Paul Armentano, who is an expert on the driving issue, so if you have a hearing on that later, he would be the appropriate person to expand on this a lot as well.
Could you get the recommendation to the committee chairs in a note? I would appreciate that, because I think we need to look down that a little bit. Thank you.
Senator Welikowski.
Thank you. Is there a level of THC that we can all agree under which a person is intoxicated?
Through the chair, unfortunately, I don't think there is a specific level of THC. Even transportation experts, the federal government's transportation board, has said there's no magic number. So I know we're familiar with how alcohol is treated, and there you can be pretty confident a person's under the influence above a certain amount. However, with marijuana, more regular users can have very high level of THC and not be impaired. There are actually 4 patients who get marijuana from the federal government and use up to, I want to say, 300 marijuana cigarettes a month. And one of the patients I know very well is not impaired at all by them because of the tolerance after year after year after year, and can pass, you know, any field sobriety test. So unfortunately, there just is no magic number. So instead, you have to rely on the field, roadside sobriety type tests.
Madam Chair.
Senator Maciejewski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. O'Keefe, can you repeat your affiliation once again, please?
Sure. The Marijuana Policy Project. It's a national nonprofit.
Okay. So my question's related to the chemistry of hash oil extraction, and I heard your comments, but is there anyone that has tried to define the specific process by what's not allowed instead of getting specific on the process? So has anyone in their legislation added something like only non-hydrocarbon based extraction methods are permitted, or something like that?
Through the chair, the language that is in the bill under consideration that has an exception for vegetable glycerin is similar to the language used in Oregon's measure that was approved by voters the same day the Alaska measure was approved. And so that's the only one that I'm aware of, but I can ask around and see if there are others as well. So it lists the methods of extraction that are exempted from the prohibition at one's home.
So follow up through the chair. So it seems like the risk is due to the hydrocarbons used in extraction. Is that correct?
Through the chair, I think some other experts might, some other people might be have more expertise in this area, such as perhaps Bruce Schulte. I conferred with some colleagues to understand how it's done and what is the risk. As I understand it, it's related to fumes that are produced. So, for example, if you use an alcohol-based butane solvent, anything that produces fumes, that's dangerous. And those fumes
will not happen if you use this cold water process or the process with vegetable glycerin, which essentially separates it out. But unfortunately, I think perhaps Bruce Schulte or someone else would have to get into, you know, more of the chemistry of it. I'm not an expert on that.
Thank you.
Well, we're running relatively late. Do you have a quick question, Representative Grunberg? Because I'd like to get to Bruce Schulte before we adjourn.
Yes. Ms. O'Keefe, we know that Washington and Colorado and now Alaska have passed laws that allow a certain amount of use of marijuana. I'm just wondering whether there are other countries or jurisdictions that have done the same thing, because it seems to me we can either look at subject matters to begin with or jurisdictions. And if we look at jurisdictions, we can see how an individual jurisdiction, number one, framed the issues and listed them, and number two, addressed them. What's your answer?
Through the chair, the only country that has completely made adult use marijuana use and production legal is Uruguay. And unfortunately, that is as new as Washington and Colorado's law, and the system isn't even up and running, and there seems to be some concern about how it's done and how realistic it is. The Netherlands, since the 70s, has had marijuana stores, which are de facto legal, but in the law themselves prohibited, and the production of marijuana is still illegal. So it's also an imperfect system, but there certainly are some lessons that could be learned from how they approach things.
One follow-up. It may be helpful, at least to me, if somebody, maybe you, can keep us informed on other jurisdictions and their progress in this area, because whether they're civil or common law jurisdictions or what, if we're addressing a common problem, I think that'll be helpful at least to have that information so we can take a look and vice versa.
Thank you.
On my point, what country did she say?
Uruguay.
Uruguay.
Uruguay?
Yes.
In South America.
Thank you.
All right, well, seeing no more questions for Ms. O'Keefe, Ms. O'Keefe, could you be sure to get us your testimony or your specific recommendations in written form and send it to both chairs so that we can get it out to the members of the committee? I'd really appreciate that. I appreciate you being here today and for waiting and for testifying.
That would be my pleasure. Thank you so much, Madam Chair.
Thank you. So the next person that we're going to call, Bruce, I know you've been waiting here for a long time, is Bruce Schulte. And Bruce, please identify yourself for the record and with whom you are representing.
Good afternoon. My name is Bruce Schulte. Last name is spelled S-C-H-U-L-T-E. And I'm a spokesman for the Coalition for Responsible Cannabis Legislation.
And Bruce, before you get into your prepared testimony, Senator Michicki had a question that Karen O'Keefe said would be more appropriately answered by you, Bruce. Did you get that question, or should I ask Senator Michicki to repeat it?
Yeah, Madam Chair, if you wouldn't mind having him repeat it, I would appreciate that.
Happy to do that, Madam Chair and Bruce. You know, I've heard this challenge before. There are folks concerned about the extraction process of hash oil, and I was just wondering if a broader definition might be more helpful, eliminating the risk of harmful or risky extraction methods. I don't know what you've seen written in other legislation in other states, but it seems like all of the more dangerous processes are hydrocarbon-based. And we don't know what future processes will look like. So should we limit it to defining it, or should we just eliminate the hydrocarbon-based extraction methods as being a possibility?
Thank you for the question, Senator. Through the chair, I had submitted a packet of material in which we attempted to clarify some of the products and processes related to this industry, and this being one of them, the practice of home extract extraction using butane. It's commonly referred to as butane ash oil. And the problem there, of course, is that, in that context, you're really talking about two things. Of course, you're talking about the hash oil, which is the product, and it's not volatile, and then the process using butane, which, of course, is, as is, you know, acetylene and, you know, helium and other gases. It's our belief that once a regulated industry is set up, and if commercial businesses are allowed to produce hash oil and other extracts in a suitable environment using closed-loop systems, trained personnel, explosion-proof lighting, and so forth, you know, appropriate facilities, it's our belief that the practice of producing hash oil at home using butane will largely disappear. And just by way of anecdotal evidence, I would point to the relative absence of backyard stills with the end of alcohol prohibition. You know, after a period of time, it was just not practical because you could go into a store and buy a much better product, much cheaper. So I know it's not a perfect answer to the concern, but I think we could hope that practice will diminish, because, you know, certainly it's not something I would recommend that anyone do. I'm not sure if that answers the question.
Not exactly. I'm still looking to eliminate that extraction process, but definitely support another process that would be safer. So we can take this offline and determine what will get us there, I think.
If I may, Senator, through the chair, perhaps I didn't understand fully. Are you referring specifically to home use or commercial production?
Well, either way, if a hydrocarbon-based extraction process is unnecessarily risky and there are other processes, I would favor them.
Okay. Through the chair, if I may, Senator, just expand on my earlier answer then. In a commercial environment, there would be little reason for a business to extract hash oil using butane in the manner that some home users are doing it now. It's not cost effective, it's not safe, it's not efficient, it's not in any way a preferred method. There are closed loop systems where the gases are entirely self-contained and recaptured for reuse, and some of them don't even involve butane at all. So that when you take it to the level of commercial production, the use of open butane in that process, I'm fairly certain, doesn't even exist. There would be no incentive to do that.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Bruce. And do you want to go on with your prepared testimony now?
Sure. And I know we're short on time, so I'll try and be brief. I had sent in two pieces of material earlier in the week. Well, one just earlier today. The first was a letter responding to the original draft of SB 30, and we had a couple of concerns there. I won't belabor the point because I think the whole question of the affirmative defense versus alternative approaches has already been addressed by people far more intelligent than me on the matter of law. So I would just speak to one other concern, which was specifically the exclusion of certain derivatives, you know, hash oil, edibles, and so forth, and then the effort to treat those separately. And in approaching that discussion, not just with this body but with others, it became apparent to us that, well, we began to suspect at least, that a lot of the problems associated with this discussion stemmed from a lack of familiarity. A lot of the terms were misleading or unfamiliar, and of course we're wrestling with some fair amount of misinformation. So our board took it upon ourselves to prepare a document which I did submit for your review. It's entitled Marijuana Products, Extracts, Derivatives, and Regulations, in which we attempt to describe not just the plant and its component parts, but the way in which parts of the cannabis plant are used and processed, and further to define what some of those concentrates and derivatives are. It's our hope that in bringing a little bit more clarity to the terms and processes, we could hopefully arrive at more practical legislation. And I think that packet was distributed to the board there was my two-page letter, then there's a packet, which I believe is about 15 pages. I don't want to speak to every page in there. A lot of it has been talked about already. Some of the questions that I think were raised today are addressed in that packet, and I'm happy to answer any questions that might be stemmed from that.
Anybody have any questions? Well, hearing no questions, then thank you very much, Bruce, for your testimony and for waiting for us. There were two other people who were online, but they are no longer with us. And is there anybody? So with that, I am going to close this meeting, and thank you all. Representative Grunberg.
Thank you. We have at least one or two people who come down to Juneau to answer questions, and I was wondering if we could invite them to come up very briefly to see if there are any questions or they want to add. And I'm looking at Quinlan over here, and there was somebody else too.
Does anybody have any questions that they would like to ask Quinlan? And I think Quinlan's the only one with us today that I think Casey may have. Okay, so we've got Casey and we've got Quinlan. Does anybody have any questions that they'd like to ask either of those folks? Representative Grunberg.
Either of you, as a general question, is there anything you've heard today that you'd like to comment on?
No, I think
Do you want to come to and identify yourself? Thank you.
Thank you. My name is Quinlan Steiner. I'm the public defender for the state of Alaska. No, I haven't heard anything that would change the testimony that the agency gave through Tracy Wallenberg yesterday. I think the major concern that we had is being addressed by the rewrite. Any other comments we have, I'd like to see that draft to get into the more technical problems that might arise. But the major concern that we had was the way the defense was structured and not meeting either consistent with the initiative itself or the Constitution.
Representative Grunberg.
I realize we have concentrated, from a technical point of view, only on the criminal aspects, the very basic criminal aspects. And there will be all kinds of other issues, warranties and Pure Food and Drug and all kinds of stuff like that. Probably premature for you to have any comments on that. Do you have anything at this early stage where we really haven't scratched the surface?
No. With regard to the regulations, that's not something I would specifically look into because we're not involved. We would sort of limit ourselves and my review to the criminal aspect of it and some of the policy issues surrounding how you address a particular concern as it relates to criminal practice. But once you start getting into the business realm, frankly, there are few indigent folks who will be charged under those statutes. If there was a business issue, I suspect they'd have money. It might come to us and we'd look into it, but I wouldn't do a broad review of regulations implementing.
If I could ask Casey a similar question.
Certainly.
Thank you.
Casey Schroeder, Assistant Attorney General for the Criminal Division at the Department of Law. And I'm sorry, Representative Grunberg, could you repeat the question?
Anything you want to say?
I concur with Quinlan. There's nothing I've heard today that would change the testimony that we previously provided to the committees.
Okay.
Thank you. Does anybody from the committee have any questions? Does anybody from the committee have any comments? Well, then I just want to thank everybody for being here today. As I mentioned, House Judiciary with respect to this bill is canceled until we have a bill that more appropriately reflects the will of the voters on this issue. And I look forward to meeting again once that happens. Meeting adjourned.